Broadcasting from the studios of Business Radio X, it's time for Laser Life Insights. This show is brought to you by Sumas Medical Laser, changing lives with the power of light. Now, here's your host, Pete Cousins.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks so much for listening in. This is Laser Life Insights. I'm your host, Pete Cousins. So excited to do this show each and every month, but most likely I am very excited about today's episode. So without further ado, we will jump in and talk with our esteemed colleague and friend, Dr. Praveen Irani. Dr. Irani is a Harvard-educated PhD in biological sciences within the dental medicine field. He's been a clinical investigator with the NIH. He's been president-elect of the World Association for Laser Therapy, chairman for Lasers and Dentistry with the ASLMS organization, the American Society for Laser and Medicine, program chair for the Wound Healing Society, chair of the Laser Light Therapy with the International Society for Optics and Photonics, president of the North American Association for Light Therapy, and currently associate professor at the University of Buffalo. And I've only listed probably a fraction of his qualifications. So such an impressive background, such an impressive amount of expertise with regards to clinical research and everything to do with photomedicine. So Dr. Irani, thank you so much for being here. I know you're extremely busy and we're so thankful for your time.
Thank you for having me, Pete.
Absolutely. So as we jump right in, I know we have a bit of a limited schedule today, but I'm always curious, and certainly with all of your time and years of experience in researching this, how and when did you become interested in photomedicine?
That's a really interesting story. So going right back to where I started in this field, I started as a disbeliever, if you will. I read this paper about how people were treating patients with light. And they were getting better from chronic wounds, various different kinds of diseases. And I was like, no way. People are not plants, right? How can you shine light on people and make them better? And interestingly enough, so to convince myself more than I think anyone else, I actually did a human clinical study about 25 years ago. And at that point, I was a resident in pathology. And we were seeing, I'm a dentist by training. So we were seeing a lot of cases where people were coming for extractions. Tooth extractions, and they needed either dentures or implants. And I read this fascinating study, which was one of the first studies by Dr. Mester on improved wound healing with light. And training as a dentist, the first thing that comes to mind when you have extraction wounds is that if it heals faster, I can put an implant or put a denture on that very quickly. So a little bit of non-altruistic, if you will, but it was fascinating that this was an area of science where you could use light to treat people. And that first study led to the observation, basically confirmation in my own hands that yes, the laser treated patients were actually getting faster, healing faster. And in that study, we started observing that one of the growth factors that is known to promote healing was upregulated. And that was the beginning of my research. I'm like, how can a protein that is necessary for wound healing is increased in its expression? And I've done the same thing for the last 24 years. And we have now found that there is a single amino acid on this growth factor called TGF-beta, transforming growth factor beta, which is light sensitive. And to give a simple analogy, we always wonder how vision is enabled, right? So how can we see visible light? And how do we make images in the brain and see things? And there is a protein in the back of your eye called rhodopsin, which senses the light and generates that signal. So it turns out for photobiomodulation or low-level light treatment or cold laser treatment, as it used to be called, these treatments work because you're actually activating these signaling pathways. And of course, the other famous molecule that everyone knows about is cytochrome C oxidase in the mitochondria. So these are well-known signaling pathways that light, just regular light, is capable at the right dose, in the right color, is capable of activating. And that is what started my whole journey. So my research now is split between clinical research and basic science research. And we are very interested in trying to bring this understanding to improve the rigor and reproducibility of photobiomodulation treatments.
It's such important work. And for those who don't understand how important it is, I think if you do a quick search through PubMed, and those of you HCPs out there who have visited PubMed.org, and the National Institute of Health has a tremendous library of legitimate peer review, clinical trials, all types of meta-analysis, places that you can go to see what type of research is being done with this type of clinical tool. And the list is endless. It's so important that you're doing this. It leads me to my next question, which we deal with all the time. There's so much confusing information, just what you've explained right there. In a simplified version, obviously the HCP is grasping what you're saying. The patient consumer, it may be a bit over their head, and that's okay. But when we think about choosing a therapy, a photobiomodulation therapy, either as a healthcare provider looking to purchase or a patient consumer looking to get treatment, this can get confusing in a hurry. And so I wonder if you have any guidance for either community regarding the essential components of a laser so that we aren't misled into either purchasing or receiving treatment from a device that may be inadequate.
So Pete, this has been the biggest challenge in the field because this treatment is so easy to do, right? And we actually wrote a very simple plain speak, I guess it's a information piece where we talked about how PBM is so easy to do, but difficult to get right. And that's been the challenge because if this treatment were not real, it would have disappeared a long time ago, right? So absolutely, this treatment has been described since the late 60s, actually Dr. Mester's original work. And if this was not a real field and things were not actually working, it would have disappeared right after that, very soon after that, because these are not cheap instruments and devices. So clearly, if the money is being spent on this treatment, it has actually got some clear efficacy. So when you think about lasers and the critical parameters, we broadly divide them into two major categories. The first category is, what is the wavelength or color of light? Okay. What is the manner of use, mode of use? Is it continuous wave or pulse? Mm-hmm. And the next two critical parameters, which is controlled by actually the operator, the HCP, as you call them, they will actually control how much energy is being deposited, right?
Okay.
So that is the power density or irradiance. And the most critical parameter is the treatment time. And we have found that, as everybody probably has, who is familiar with the field knows, that there is some reciprocity on increasing the irradiance and reducing time, or reducing the irradiance and increasing time. But they occur within a given zone. And the analogy often given is that if you take a candlelight and try to cook a chicken on it, it probably will never get cooked if you try to cook the candle flame. But at the other end, if you take an air jet engine and stick a chicken inside, that'll get real crispy in a second. Right. So there is a sweet spot there where you want to do it in the right threshold between the irradiance and time. The second broad category of parameters, which is now getting a lot of attention, is how are you doing the treatment? So before we had a single laser pointer kind of device and people had to scan various areas. Mm-hmm. And it became very important to realize whether you're using a static beam or are you doing a scanning mode to do the treatments. Mm-hmm. But now we have really nice optics where we can actually make a really large beam. And at the very end of that spectrum is we have entire beds, which you can put people in. So the delivery of the light dose has become a major question because of innovations in the technology. And that is getting a lot of attention. So before, we used to only talk about device parameters, what color of light are you using, how much energy are you using. But now we have also started paying a lot of attention to what is the format of dose delivery. Mm-hmm. And there are significant, as we have discussed before, Pete, there are significant differences between the bed and a handheld device. And both have immense utility depending on what the clinical application is. So I only have good dental examples. I'm thinking of another example. I don't know. I guess most of the people play pickleball now. So if you use a pickleball pad and try to play golf with it, it's not going to be very effective. And similarly, the other way around, you take a golf club and try to play pickleball, it's not going to work very well. You can hit the ball, but you're really not going to play a good game.
Right.
So choosing the right device is going to be, I think, the next big question in the field. Not only you have to pay attention to what color you're using, how much energy does it have, and what is your target, right? What is your biological target? Mm-hmm. We know one of the good things about photobiomodulation is it can do a lot of different things. That is also a negative, because unless you know what you're trying to do in the patient, are you trying to mitigate pain? Are you trying to mitigate inflammation? Are you trying to promote healing? Those are very different biological responses. And once we understand those critical parameters, what is your target? What is your device? How are you delivering your energy? Then we will start getting predictable clinical outcomes. So the new mantra in the field is diagnosis and a prescription. Right. And that's the direction I wish, and I think all of us are talking about it now in the field. That's the direction we would like to see the field evolve.
So speaking of that evolution within the field, how have any of the governing bodies, you've been an integral part of the World Association of Laser Therapy, the North American Association of Laser Therapy, these governing bodies, not to mention the FDA, do you see consensus guidelines or consensus on parameters ever becoming a reality in our lifetime?
So I'm an optimist, so I always think it's possible. And I think we have been successful with supportive cancer care, as WALT has published guidelines actually on the back of two major organizations, Multinational Association of Supportive Care in Cancer, MASC, and the International Society of Oral Oncology. The MASC, ISOO, and WALT guidelines on supportive cancer care recommends the use of photobiomodulation for prevention and treatment of cancer treatment oncotherapy-associated mucositis. Mm-hmm. This can be chemo, this can be radiation, or even transplant. So graft versus host disease can be effectively treated. So this area, we already have consensus based on 35 placebo-controlled, multi-center, blinded human clinical trials. Mm-hmm. In other areas, as in case of tendonitis, in case of sports injury, rehab, wound healing, there is expert consensus that this treatment works, but we are trying to, because these studies have been done with so different devices and parameters, we are trying to get, and all of them work, right? Because as most of the stuff that is published is positive results. So we are trying to understand what is the commonality between them. And that's been an ongoing debate since 2018, I believe. So we've been trying, we're getting there, but we've been trying to find what is common? Why does it work with a particular device and particular parameters?
Yeah, we wish you all the best. Of course, we're very biased, but I think everybody out there listening who's known someone, and it's almost all of us who have known someone going through cancer treatment, whether we have ourselves, and the incidence of oral mucositis, I understand, if I'm not too far off base on the statistics, something upwards of 40% of cancer patients going through irradiation or chemo treatment will experience some degree of burning mouth or oral mucositis. Those who have a head and neck cancer, that incidence could go as high as 80%. So this is a terrible affliction. And from what I understand, it can cause many patients to insist upon stopping their chemotherapy, stopping their radiation so they can try to recover from the painful condition in their mouth. If there was a tool, and there is a tool now, that can resolve or mitigate that painful condition and help that mucosa, that lining around the inside of your mouth, to regenerate while going through this other therapy, hopefully it would allow these patients to complete their care and get over the cancer more quickly and readily. I also believe, if you listen to other podcasts out there and you look at some of the chat rooms, conflicting information about true contraindications for PBM, and cancer is at the top of the list. So as we are going to spread awareness, and the whole reason I'm doing this podcast is to make sure that we are spreading facts about what can be done, what should and shouldn't be done. What I'm hearing you say with all of this research you've done around oral mucositis, there should be no contraindication to a patient receiving PBM if they have active cancer and they're currently undergoing active chemo or radiation. True or false?
True. And the data backing this up is actually from mucositis clinical studies that contributed to the guidelines. Many of these studies were done in a preventive manner, which means that these were actually cancer patients with tumors in the head and neck region who were either getting radiation or chemotherapy. And they were getting photobiomodulation to prevent the mucositis from occurring or reducing the severity of the pain or actual ulceration. Mm-hmm. And all those studies were positive. And they noticed that these patients actually got less recurrences and less secondary tumors. If you look at the clinical literature, there are two well-cited studies that have shown that photobiomodulation for oral mucositis prevention showed less tumors, and that could be partly attributed, as you pointed out, to non-disruption of the chemoradiation regimen, because mm-hmm. when they get these ulcerations, it's so bad that they have to stop the cancer treatment till mm-hmm. they recover. It's a holiday, and then they go back on the treatment. Sometimes that can be fatal and reduces the efficacy of treatment. There is unequivocal evidence that the photobiomodulation does not increase tumor burden.
Right.
Now, whether it actually reduces it, we need to actually go into more detail, and whether it can be attributed just to completion of the treatment, or is there a direct effect on tumor cells? And right. there is some lab evidence that is true. When you think about tumor cells and you think about normal cells, it's not like tumor cells have an armor of titanium or some yeah. kind of a special spacesuit or something that right. makes them unique. They are normal cells. They are just dysregulated.
Mm-hmm.
And that dysregulation, when you look at why are they dysregulated, is basically a metabolic and signaling disruption. So when you give normal cells energy, good energy via photobiomodulation, they use it in a positive manner to improve healing, to reduce pain, to reduce inflammation. A tumor cell, which is, if you will, rogue in nature, dysfunctional in nature, mm-hmm. takes the same energy. And in the lab, we have observed that it commits suicide. It actually kills itself. Mm-hmm. It undergoes a process called apoptosis or autophagy. So there is evidence, at least in the lab, that these cancer cells interpret that good energy in a negative way, mm-hmm. which is good for us. So you get actually less tumor cell survival. There is also some evidence that it might improve chemotherapy and radiation responsiveness. Again, these are ongoing studies, and there's a lot of excitement with cancer immunotherapy, which is the latest treatment available.
Absolutely. Such good points to make. So if you're listening, please, please consider photobiomodulation if you or anyone has been going through chemo or radiation treatment and has experienced any of this, what they call burning mouth or oral mucositis. The last thing I'll note about that, and this is another fact, photobiomodulation, regardless of the wavelength or what we sometimes call the color of light, the therapeutic wavelengths that are used in clinical practice and also in the lab are all what's termed as non-ionizing forms of light. And what is the definition of non-ionizing light?
When we think about ionizing radiation, we are normally thinking about X-rays and radiographs, right? Or mm-hmm. cancer treatments. The way those treatments work is that you have a very high energy electromagnetic radiation, but this form of radiation has very high energy, which allows the energy to be transferred into the nucleic acids mm-hmm. in the cell and cause a break. And that is the ionizing process. So we want that to happen in tumor cells because we want to destroy their DNA and destroy the tumors. As radiation hazards with imaging, radiographs, is restricted for that very reason, that when you're trying to take a radiograph, you don't want too much dose because then you'll actually start causing transformation, right? Mm-hmm. In contrast to that, all the wavelengths or colors of light used for photobiomodulation are in the visible and near-infrared wavelength, so 400 to 1200. There is some evidence that even further out, there might be some photobiomodulatory effects. But what we are confident about is blue all the way to near-infrared, to 1064, all the way out to 1200.
Okay, perfect. Excellent information. So just be mindful of time. I don't know that this would be a quick answer, but I think it's a really valid question. Mainstream medicine continues to struggle with the acceptance of this as a legitimate clinical tool or therapy. It's often referred to as a pseudoscience. I was listening to Andrew Huberman's podcast last night and Gary Brecka, The Perfect Human, both fantastic podcasts. And they were talking about light and they mentioned this very thing, that it's negatively viewed as a pseudoscience or a holistic or alternative type of therapy, which couldn't be further from the truth. Why do you think that still is, with all the clinical evidence to prove otherwise? And if you're talking to someone who is one of those naysayers, as you said you were in the very beginning, how do you try to bring them around to reality and fact?
So we've been, as a field, we've been struggling with this. If this treatment is real, we know these benefits. There are so many chronic diseases that there is no other treatment. Concussion is one example. Alzheimer's is another example. Where we need new treatments, why are we not getting traction has always been a big concern. And largely, I think among the field, among the experts in the field, we have identified two major reasons. The first reason is the inherent disbelief of this treatment. You're never taught in medical school or dental school or physical therapy about light as a therapeutic tool, right? Mm-hmm. You hear about ionizing radiation, you hear about other drugs and surgical techniques, but you never hear about light as a treatment. So that has been one of the biggest reasons why professionals who hear about this treatment are skeptical. And that's rightly so, because I would not treat my patients with something that I don't understand and I have never been trained in. So that's been one of the biggest challenges, is it is not a part of formal education. And even if you get this information, usually it's either a commercial activity where you're learning about it for the first time, or you're actually hearing it in a CE program or a conference. Mm-hmm. So that has been one of the biggest challenges. It is not taught in medical school, mainstream curriculum yet. And we have been trying a lot, especially in dentistry, where my lab is and my center of my focus is. We've been doing a lot of teaching, even at the pre-doctoral or the dental school main curriculum level. And we know that many other physical therapy, chiropractors, as well as physicians are actually coming around to thinking about light as a therapeutic tool. The other reason we find that there is a lot of skepticism is when you experience this treatment, or if you're delivering this treatment, nothing happens. There is no change in the patient that people can appreciate. Yeah, you feel a little warm sometimes, and you see a bright light. But other than that, there is no like real change. And that has been the other reason, because it usually takes multiple treatments and you have to persevere, right? So it has to be, I know there are different protocols, but in our hands, we do about at least 3 treatments a week for 2 weeks before we see, especially in chronic diseases, we start seeing some benefit. So that requires commitment on the patient's part to come in and the clinician to not give up on, I don't see anything, what am I doing? So that has been a huge challenge, and especially to someone who's new in the field. It's been but it sounds like pseudoscience. I'm shining light on people. Right. What the heck am I doing? So
how can something so simple be so powerful?
The simplicity, again, you nailed it, Pete. The term simplicity for this treatment has actually been a backlash. They're like, how can it be that simple? How are we treating such important big diseases without using million-dollar drugs and surgical techniques?
Of course. So if someone was to go to any website reference to try to get some more factual information, where would you send them? Would you send them to Walt or NALT or any other good website addresses?
So I wish I could say Walt with a lot of confidence, but there's only one consensus paper on it right now. And we are building consensus. So there's a big meeting coming up in London, which I would encourage all of you to attend. That will be one of, I think, the biggest meetings we have had to date. And there will be a lot of resources and the experts in the field who will actually provide that information. So there will be a lot of good information in conferences, and there are several of them. American Society for Lasers in Surgery and Medicine, ASLMS, Walt, and several other meetings that you can attend. The other reliable source is, of course, PubMed. But unfortunately, it's not the easiest to navigate if you don't know what you're looking for. So even my students in my lab usually start with Google Scholar, right? Just Google search it first. And now with ChatGPT, you get even better responses. So yeah. I think it's a very rapidly changing world where information is available, but you need to be able to evaluate that information. And that's where some of the fundamental information, I'm sure the website, your website also has information on fundamentals. If you understand the fundamentals, then finding the right literature for your specific clinical application is the challenge, because it can do so many different things. It's not like you read one paper and you can do all the different treatments.
Exactly. Just to give some people some specifics, the World Association for Photobiomodulation Therapy is WALTPBM.org. So WALTPBM.org is one web address. Obviously, sumislaser.com. And we have a clinical studies link on the site. So sumuslaser.com, you can go to the science tab and see a collection of at least abstracts of a number of different studies that have been performed. They're referencing straight from PBM from within the NIH website. So again, pubmed.org, you can get a lot of great information. To Dr. Arani's point, the search bar at the top of that website sometimes is a little bit tough to find what you're looking for. So you can either use a few acronyms, PBMT, comma, whatever condition you're thinking about. So PBMT, comma, oral mucositis can give you some great hits that way. Also LLLT for low-level laser therapy, comma, XYZ condition. And you can also find a lot of results that way. If you're struggling to find factual information and you really need some assistance, please don't hesitate to reach out to me directly. My email is pcousins, P-C-O-U-S-I-N-S, at sumuslaser.com, and I will definitely direct you to the right place. Dr. Arani, I'm not sure that you're able to answer all the incoming emails you're getting. We'll filter through those and make sure we direct questions your way as it's appropriate. I know we're running short on time. Boy, I tell you, we have to have you back on the show because I could go on for hours asking you questions. Such great information. As we wrap up, I just wanted to touch briefly on something that's new to us and very exciting for us at Sumus, the whole body photobiomodulation, or what most people refer to as the red light therapy bed. Something that we've just gotten into. We just made a commercial launch, and you can find us at vita.sumuslaser.com. That's vita.sumuslaser.com. But Dr. Arani, as you had mentioned, the irradiance and the time being two of the most critical parameters. If somebody lays in a red light therapy bed, this filled with tens of thousands of LED bulbs, what should they expect to experience physiologically in any number of different use cases? I know we talk about prevention, we talk about wellness, and we talk about recovery. So can you just touch briefly on your experience with these beds?
So I think the place to start would be the cancer supportive care cancer guidelines, and using that as a focus, because we understand a lot and we have the clinical evidence. We know that this treatment works really well for prevention, right? And there is no lesion on the patient. So there are no ulcerations or wounds on the patient. And even if there is pain or fatigue, it's generalized. It's not in one particular area. So the bed offers a very unique way of increasing resilience in the patient. And what I mean by that is that you're causing a very low amount of stress at the cellular level, which prepares them for either chemo, radiation, doing an event, or even anti-aging and wellness. So we have all these daily stressors in our lives, and we don't think about it, but that's one of the reasons you get aging, is because you're getting all these stressors which accumulate. So the bed offers you a very unique modality to improve your resilience, which can be thought of as a way of improving wellness and anti-aging. It could also be thought of as a way of rehab or improving performance. It's training before an event. If you're going to run like an Ironman, you probably want to do smaller races and train yourself before you go for the big one, or you're not going to do well in the big one, right? Mm-hmm. Similarly, at the molecular, at the cellular level, the light-induced low stress seems to have a similar effect. And the patient as a whole is actually ready for the next whatever trauma or injury that's coming, or strenuous activity. So I think the bed is going to be a major way in the future of treating a person. And even things like our digital displays, our phones, our TV screens, our computer screens are sources of light. And there are several innovations in those spaces where, rather than just being a source of light, that light that is being emitted will become therapeutic, right? So there are some very interesting ways of improving our general health and wellness. And I guess the ultimate hope is that we will not have chronic disease, and maybe someday we will challenge the concept of aging. So I think there is a lot of exciting new work coming out, and I think the whole body unit is going to be a game changer.
Fantastic. We can't wait to keep spreading the news. And We can't thank you enough for being here. Again, here at Sumis, we really, truly are passionate about changing lives through light therapy. And Dr. Irani, you're at the forefront of all of this. So thank you so much for all the clinical work that you do and all the factual information that you spread around the world. We'll see you again soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please don't forget to check us out at sumislaser.com and also our new microsite, vita.sumislaser.com. We'll look forward to seeing you next month and have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you for joining us on Laser Life Insights. This show is brought to you by Sumis Medical Laser, revolutionizing laser therapy to heal with the power of light. For more information, go to sumislaser.com.